not just in the position, but the position the DDG who was in that position resigned at the end of December. That's with Dr. Mahapa. So we made a submission which we're waiting approval from the executive authority to exercise the post. So we hope to exercise the post in case as soon as we decide about the compensation. So we really want to see that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, the point two on the agenda is the briefing on the second and third quarter reports, performance reports. And, Chair, I would like to make a suggestion. I don't know if this will meet with your approval, because the second quarter ended at the end of September. And then the third quarter ended at the end of December, and we're already in March. Now, I don't know if you want me to go through in detail first the one report and then the next report, because the format of the two reports is basically the same. I thought I could just highlight maybe in the second quarter some issues and then go to the same slide in the third quarter and highlight those issues. It will show you the improvements, and then we can also talk about the plans we put in place to deal with those issues.
No, that's fine. I think that is the understanding of the performance members, as I said when we started today.
So, Chair, if we start on the second quarter report, let me then just jump. If we jump to slide six, which is the financial executive summary, then basically the first bullet there is that the budget is 597 million of the department. By the end of the second quarter, we should have spent 27% of the budget, and by the end of the third quarter, at the end of the second quarter, we should have spent 50% of the budget, and then the end of the third quarter, we should have spent 75% of the budget. If we look at the budget, 56% of it, 323 million, is for benefits, of which 262 million is for the benefits under socioeconomic support, which is housing, education, healthcare, social relief of distress, the military pension, counseling. And then another 71 million of benefits falls under empowerment and stakeholder management, and that's dealing with skills development, business empowerment, and aerial supports. Now, at the end of September, we should have spent half the budget, but we had only spent 35% of the budget at that point in time. And however, of the spend, we had already spent more than half of the budget on cost of employment. And we were behind in spending on benefits at that point. So clearly the problem was the capacity to roll out the benefits as it should have been at that time. And I don't think that I'm raising anything new, because these are amongst the issues we've been discussing in the committee, in particular to look at the CSI reports as well. Then on the next page, just in terms of the breakdown of some of the issues, and that's on page seven, the rollout of the SRD benefits began in June, but it was backdated to May. In other words, we only started paying in June, but we were actually paying for the May period and the June period when we started. By the end of September, we had already overspent on education support, and I just want to say a few words about it because it will come up consequently. As we've reported previously to the committee, there was a severe under-budgeting for education support for this current financial year. In the budget for this year, we budgeted 26.4 million for education support. And there was already accruals from the previous year of about 50 million. So in other words, what we expected to pay for the previous year was about double what was budgeted for. And then if we look at the steps we've been taking in the last few months, we've significantly increased the number of people who are receiving education support. In the last academic year, we were at about 5,300. This academic year, we've processed now about 8,700. So it's a more than 50% increase in the number of people who are receiving the support. And that you'll see all through the reports that we're going to go through today, that not only was the budget very low, but we way exceeded the budget. If we talk now where we are, I think we've probably spent about 100 million rand so far, and we're aiming to spend 140 million rand on education support. But go back to what the budget was. It was only 26.4 million rand. So we didn't even budget about a quarter of what the need was. So I've put that up front because you'll see in these reports it shows overspending from the very beginning on education support. If you look at that slide, which has just been put up there, which looks at the spending per key benefit, you'll see there's a red next to education support because of the overspending. So by the 30th of September, we had already spent 40 million, which was 152% of the budget. And as I was saying, we will be, by the end of the financial year, have spent somewhere around 150 million. I don't know if we should just maybe switch the lights. I don't know if people can see the slides. I'm just trying to ask that.
We also have hard copies as well.
Then, Chair, also by that stage, 30th, we had overspent on the burial support by 1.1 million, and that also had to do with accruals, a retrospective payment for burial support. Okay. And then we haven't, and we still haven't, got a system in place around paying for pension and transport. So if we then just look at the slide, which is on page 6, sorry, page 8, we'll see that the top two red items are the compensation for injury and pension transfer. Compensation for injury, we've only started in this last quarter to pay out for it. But we've been progressing quite well now. We've put systems in place to do assessments for compensation for injury. We have professionals that go and do a professional assessment, they write a report, and then if the report indicates the person deserves the compensation, we've started the process to pay that. So that's essentially a new benefit that we've introduced in this financial year, but it wasn't yet being paid in the second quarter, it's been paid in the last quarter. And I'll be corrected, but we should have now paid about 190 or 100 people compensation. And more are being affected, so we'll see more and more payments. Pension, we still don't have a proper system in place for that, and we will have to roll that over to the new year. In fact, already we've engaged with Treasury and taking that money that was allocated to pension and putting it into the education support money because we were so under budgeted. So the money will be used, it just won't be used for pension. Social relief of distress. On this slide, we were at 41%, which was okay. As I said, we started paying that benefit in June. The initial payments were being paid through one of the banks, but now we've insourced the payment process. We've created the capacity in the department, and we pay it directly from the department side. We're not 100% there in having sufficient capacity, but we are managing it to make the payments. then healthcare is amber on that slide. At the end of the second quarter, we had only spent 10% of the allocated budget on healthcare. But let me say the problem with the healthcare is the healthcare is provided at present from SAM, the South African Military Health Service. The systems in SAM have not been efficient in invoicing the departments for healthcare. So we had a huge backlog because SAM had not processed the invoices to us, and we were still receiving at this point in time invoices from the previous year. So we have engaged with SAM, and we've also put systems in place in our branch space and in finance to process the invoices, and we've played a big catch-up on that. So now, as we're sitting here, we've caught up the invoices to December last year. So we're well into this financial year. We're not quite where we want to be because we would like to pay within 30 days, but we can only work on what SAMS forwards to us. But we've been able to catch up that significantly. So you'll see in later reports that the expenditure has gone up significantly with regard to healthcare. And as I say, we've caught up from where we were paying last year's invoices to we basically 2 or 3 months behind, but we should be able to deal with those as we go forward. And we've had to also allocate more money because we were dealing with accruals and this year's ones, so the expected expenditure is above the budget. The other issue, and we were in a discussion yesterday in the Council on Defence, where we had a brief discussion on SAM. One of the problems with the late arrival of the invoices is that actually the department doesn't have an MOU or a service level agreement with SAMS itself. We have it with the Department of Defence. And then you have Department of Defence, then you have the Chief of the Defence Force, and then you have the military service. So there's a whole bureaucratic process to go through before we receive the invoices at the moment. So what we've decided is we will write our own service level agreement directly with SAMS. And that will mean they will then be able to pay us, to send the invoices directly to us. And then we will be able to process and pay them, which will then cut down the bureaucracy in the process, and we hope will speed up. The second point about doing our own SLA with SAMS is we will then also put in the SLA expected quality of service that veterans should receive in the military health facility, and we'll be able to monitor that directly instead of having this indirect process via the Department of Defense. So that's something we're going to be working on. Chair, the last benefit, the third last benefit I want to talk about here, and I hope having spoken about these, I won't have to repeat it when we go to the next quarter, but the housing benefits, at that point, we had only spent 8% of the budget when we should have spent half the budget. Again, as we've reflected in the committee, we have put special steps in place to try and deal with housing delivery. We set up a task team with the Department of Human Settlements. That task team meets weekly. The department has provided the Department of Human Settlements with a list of 1,421 non-statutory force members that should be given housing. And that's the list that we're working on at the moment to provide houses to. And our target was to provide, as I've reported before, an IDT house by the end of the financial year, and then to upgrade those houses to military veteran specifications in the beginning of the coming financial year. We are still busy with human settlements on this. They're busy allocating houses. They've taken our list. and they are plotting those applications to housing projects that they could do. So if you are Mafu and you come from Bishu and you've applied for a house, then they are now looking at the list and saying the nearest housing project to Bishu is in this place. We will then allocate the sand to that for you in that project. So that's where we are with the process, and again it should accelerate the delivery of houses. The target in the APP was 1,000, but as I say, the figure we're wanting to provide is 1,421. So we, as we said before, everything might not be in place by the end of this financial year, but very soon in the new financial year, we should show a significant delivery, and that should put us in an ability in the coming year also to really also raise this issue. And I must say, there's a significant commitment at the political and senior management level in DHS to solve this problem of housing solutions. Just also in terms of the budget for housing, we've discussed this matter both with National Treasury and with the Auditor General, and they've agreed that the money that was allocated for housing should be shifted into the education budget by and large, so that we can deal with the huge over expenditure in education, with the understanding that the payments that DMV will be expected to do around housing delivery will be in the beginning of the new financial year. So we won't lose that money. They will allow us to budget for it for the next financial year, but we will use it for education purposes. I think they've been very understanding in terms of the problems we've had with using a budget that didn't meet what is required in terms of AACP and CIPD. Then under ESM, we've got the two benefits, skills development and burial support. In terms of skills development, at that point there was also significant under expenditure in September. It was on 14%. We've taken significant steps to improve expenditure and delivery of the skills service. We have now provided skills training to more than 1,000 beneficiaries, as we are now, and we've upped the expenditure, but we've also taken some money from skills development to put it into education, because there's such a need for money in education. And then lastly, burial support. I think I've mentioned that we were still paying for payments from the previous year. We've now paid those payments, and the system is now working where basically with burial support, if someone passes away as a veteran and is entitled to the burial support and the paperwork is submitted, we are usually paying or able to transfer money for the burial within a week to the undertakers, and sometimes within a few days. So the system is much more efficient. The major kind of bottleneck in the system is really just the paperwork from the family. We can get the right paperwork from the family, like a death certificate, and proof. Often the problem in families is the relationship. Are we paying the burial support to the right person? Because unfortunately families have their disputes as well. Do we pay it to the wife, do we pay it to the sister? But we don't have those problems, then it's fairly safe. So Chair, let me say that I tried to use this slide to give you a summary of where we are. I don't think I need to go through slide 9 and 10, which is the same information, just using the economic classifications. And then also more detail on the other worry would be that by the end of the second quarter, the department was facing severe problems of underperformance and underspending. And since then, we've put in place the plans to deal with those issues. Maybe if I could go then just to slide 15, which gives a summary of, at that point in time, which what the targets were planned and the targets that were achieved. Administration has achieved 9 out of 10 targets, SET has achieved 4 out of 5 targets, and ESM has achieved 2 out of the 5 targets. However, that does not give the picture of what I was talking about earlier in terms of expenditure. And then from page 17 onwards, there's the detail of the performance indicators from the AFP and which ones have been achieved. You'll see in administration, by and large, we were achieving our targets. That's page 17 and 18 and 19. Let me just say, Chair, I just want to highlight on slide 19, performance indicator 110, which is on performance agreements submitted. It does say there that at the end of quarter two, there was 100% compliance. But in fact, there was, at that point, one performance agreement still outstanding. I don't want this issue, because this issue, I think, is an issue we're trying to resolve. So 100% is not, it should be 99.5% or something like that. But there was one outstanding. And then performance indicators 112 at the bottom of that page on the payments within 30 days. This is an issue we've been working on. I think we've also reported to the committee on this. We've also discussed it with SCOPA. The problem we're having with paying within 30 days is that there are three big accounts where we deal with lots of invoices, and often the invoices are coming to us late. Those are for travel. That's Travel with Flair, it's the service provider, it's Vodacom, and CETA, okay, the information technology agency. And in fact, in the next quarter, the performance went down a bit because of the problems of, you can imagine, say with the travel agent or with Vodacom, we're dealing with all the phone accounts of the department staff. With Travel with Flair, we're dealing with all the travel that the department pays for. It's a lot of invoices, and the systems were not properly in place. But we've now put in place systems, and we're hoping that actually from the March report, and especially the report for April and so on, that we will go from kind of the 30%, I think in January it went even down to 20%, the number of invoices that were paid in 30 days. We think we're going to push it up to in the 80%. Then if we go to page 21, performance indicator 202 is red. That's the one on housing. I think I've given an explanation around that. That at that point in time, we were not really having a system to provide housing. So we subsequently rectified that. And then if we go to page 24, there's performance indicator 301, which is the issue of MOUs. We've discussed this quite a lot in the department. We've also looked at it in terms of the coming year's APP. We think the indicator was not really that useful because what we had a system where all we had to report on was the number of MOUs, and there was no evaluation. Is there a strategy for the MOUs? Is there a reason why we would sign the MOU? If we sign the MOU, does the department have the capacity to deliver on that? So what we tried to do is to rein in the unit that is dealing with MOUs and get them to consult with the delivery branches of the department so that they align their work with the MOUs that we require. So I would say that's kind of the explanation for not performing there. own house in order, and that means focusing on benefits on veterans who are in South Africa. So we haven't paid much attention to that issue, to be honest, because we're putting so much effort into delivering those services. And then, Chair, on page 26 is the number of posts, the funded posts, the filled posts, etc. Again, this is an issue we've discussed with the committee. We're busy with the new structure, trying to get approval for the structure. We're busy negotiating with DPSA and National Treasury on that. We've moved beyond kind of what's reported yet, but although we are still reliant quite a lot on contractors, colleagues that are not part of the permanent establishment of the department, but that have contracts, and also interns for the delivery of services. Then, Chair, so let me not go through then the third quarter report. Say that it did show some improvement, but the issues that I've been raising now still found expression in the third quarter. Although there was some improvement, you'll see if we look at slide 7 of the third quarter report, which looks again at the key benefits, you'll see by then there have been significant expenditure already on the SRP, the social relief state benefit. We were then up to 84% of the budget being spent. We had not yet started on the compensation. The education support, we had also gone up. We were by then on 44 million, which was about getting towards double what was on the budgeted. Health and wellness, we were still at that point behind, as explained, and Harvey has explained. Skills development, we had spent more money, but we were not quite where we should be. And burial support, the other expenditure was very small. Let me stop at that point, maybe.
Thank you very much. Now, that I think is that the chair of the third quarter report, because what we want to know is actually what you are showing as to from what you observed in the second quarter report, the challenges that you had. Which areas did you improve? I think you have touched on that, honorable members. Now, I'll request honorable members to interact with the report, your comments, your questions on clarification, and your suggestions. Thank you very much, honorable members, honorable Bandusa, honorable Sao, honorable Murray, in that order.
Thank you very much, honorable chairman, and thank you very much, SMTT, for the presentation. I think it is give us a clear indication of what is happening. My first question is around the slide 25, where you refer to the number of agreements discussed. So here you are reporting that for now we have not yet concluded policy. So my question is, do you have at least a time frame? Because We cannot cooperate if we don't have promises in place. We are going to have problems. So since you observe that you don't have this policy for the second and third quarter, when do you intend to start dealing with that issue of policy? Then the other issue is not the incidence of mosquito. Then you are referring to slide 27. Yes, we appreciate that there are posts that have been failed so far, but we still have 35 posts that are vacant. So it's not a chart, it's a number, a significant number. If those posts can be filled. So are you on the process, you have started the process of filling them now, or you are waiting for the next financial year budget to make sure that you fill those posts? Then the last one, Chair, is on
Chair, I'd just like to raise one of the issues is my concern is the QPR, the quarterly performance report that we receive, is normally scheduled. Now clearly we have two reports being done at the same time. And the whole purpose of quarterly report is quarterly reporting to check progress and to monitor improvement at the time after that period has concluded. And that was my concern with the dashboard. If we say we are complying to a quarterly report, and it must be at a certain time it's submitted. Otherwise, it becomes obsolete, irrelevant. Then we might as well just discuss the third quarter report and or the fourth quarter report that is now due. So I think the important issue for all departments would be to comply with the quarterly reports. So compliance, when we say it's 100% on our dashboard or on the report, it is not 100% because it wasn't submitted on time. So I would insist that if we're going to follow those guidelines, that we comply to the time frame so that it helps the committee to do their work. Otherwise, we cannot monitor. We don't know actually what's happening, unless we're going to put questions in separately to find out what is actually happening in the department. And of course, the concern I have is we're receiving large reports this year, in the fourth quarter. And my concern that I have is, what happened to these reports? And did these reports, did they actually, were they incorporated in the BRRR? Were they part of the adjustments budget? This year I can hear the DG speaking about, yes, we're planning to increase the education behavioral support because we see the strength. We're going to transfer and we'll have to be accommodated. There is a director from the minister. We can proceed with it and it will be in the adjustments. Last year's increases, which was over and above what was committed to education and burial, was that in the adjustment? How was that actually regularized? And that creates a problem because that report would certainly be irregular. So what happened now for last year is already something regular. Going ahead in the new year, I can appreciate and understand. And of course, the position that's taken and is planned for, that there will be adjustments in this coming year. The issue of the capacity of staff has been it was considered a high risk. For a number of years, it still appears to be a high risk. We'd like to have the position of the skills audit. What is the skills audit? What is that produced? What interventions have taken place? Have the staff become really more effective? I've seen certain changes, but that's only at the top end. I don't know further down the line how competent people are that are just doing basic data capture. And are they feeding in the correct information in the correct way so the computer can process it and that we can have reliable data? So the skills audit, we'd like to know where exactly it is so that we can eliminate this high risk factor of incompetent staff. The two benefits, of course, that we know is way overspent is education and the burial. Now, there are two things that are not mentioned. One is how much money is really going into private education that's costing the department 80 to 100,000 per year per child. It's not a normal just Model C school. It's an expensive private school that people's kids are in, at the expense of other military veterans' children that are also deserving. I'd like that matter to be cleared up, and if there's guidelines that can be set aside or criteria to look at the regulations to be more stringent so that more people can benefit from the money allocated to military veterans and their dependents. It is a great concern that some people are reaping the benefits, and when there are not sufficient money, others that come later, they will then suffer. The other one which is not mentioned in burial support, I appreciate the applications and the department's cooperation with us when we report these matters, that they assist in every possible way, and that is to get the 30,000 to the family and to assist the family in that difficult period. The concern I have is not that which we assist with the application, as all the peripheral matters of related expenses, of buses, of functions that was followed, and how much does the department pay actually for related expenses and not for the actual benefit of 30,000. We'd like to know that per burial, what actually happens. Are some people receiving much more than others of the 30,000? And that's why the figures for 152 was inflated. We see how many million is spent on 152 burials. We can just divide it and we can get the amount, the average amount. But the averages don't always, it's not disaggregated to know who the specific individuals that actually get maximum benefit from burial support. Those reports, I think, we need to be detailed for us so we can appreciate how money is actually being spent. And that money can be saved, and that we must all understand that it's a limited amount of money and there's a lot of people that still need to benefit from the system. And then, of course, the issue that we want to raise is the pension. And I think the department made a big mistake because it came to one of our committee meetings where actually listened. There was an announcement by the official about pension, actual figures. I actually received from military veterans notices of 4,200 and somewhat, money that they would receive per month. And I warned the department, I said, please don't put up such information if Treasury has not approved it and actually budgeted for it. And there is no due process in place to actually pay out money. So we have a flood of calls now coming in, people asking for military pension, which is unnecessary. So I'm asking the department to be proactive. If there is a policy and it's approved and it's budgeted for, can we make an announcement and communicate this to military veterans so we prevent unnecessary phone calls and complaints and desperation on the side and frustration? The communication and marketing strategy is important, that if policies are not yet finalized, it be communicated to military veterans. If they are completed, it's communicated. If payment takes place, it's put in, it's communicated. Because it comes to our doorstep, because they don't get the responses to their phone calls are not answered, queries are not responded to in time, it takes months. There's a query that's on my desk now, it's probably 3 years running. It's now been finalized, but it's been sent to the president, to the deputy president, to the minister. All over the world it's been sent. This person has out of frustration. So now it's come to a conclusion and the payment has not been effected, the EFT has not taken place. So the complaints come back to us. The issue is then also the transport one. We insisted that it is fundamental to access work, that this policy must be finalized, the MOU and SLA must be finalized, we must engage the transport authorities, and we must try and get access for military veterans to get to a work situation. I'm very happy that the investment is going into education, but people still need to access and to get to the education institution. They need to get to a TVET college. Transport is fundamental in also accessing work. So I'm urging the department to please speed up that process, and that, of course, although it's with the SDS, but the most important part of it is the policy environment which resides under administration, which is performing well, but how much support is given from administration to SDS? Or are they left to write their own things and to prepare their own things? Or is the major policy and SLA that MOU is actually designed under the administration? The other one is housing. I see three figures. One is with the housing department, 1,421, which has been basically identified by human settlements, and that's agreed to. There's no problem. It's over and above the 1,000. And the rollout, we may not achieve. But it's been clearly identified. the processes, we'd like to probably know how the criteria, how it's been allocated, because it's some from national. There must be a subsidy attached to that, because DMV only puts a top up. And if this has been agreed to 14021, has every individual been identified? Are they part of a beneficiary list where housing schemes will be built? Has that been communicated to the local or provincial authorities where they will actually build the houses? If those things have been settled, when we say 14021 has been approved. There's also a figure which was given by the department by 4,990 of beneficiaries on a housing list that is pre-approved. And according to the reports that we received of the second and third quarter, there's only 3,500 somewhat mentioned in this report. But I do know that the DG and the department reported that there was 4,990 pre-approved ones. So why does that figure differ from what is reported in this, or did it happen subsequently? The other one is the issue of the SANDF. I've noticed now there's a number of applications coming in from SANDF, which is our force officer from 1994 under the new dispensation. Now, we'd like to know is what has the DOD put in place for our soldiers that are in the new regime in terms of pension, medical aid, etc., so that they don't actually come back to the military veterans, because they are now all included. And I'm asking what regime was in place for medical aid and for pension, so that they could have been more independent and not come back for benefits, which was actually looking at those of the NSF and probably of others before that also suffered. So just the status and what programs are actually in place to deal with that SANDF part, and that they also not become a huge burden on the DMV. That's the other one. The other one, of course, which is a concern, is the health invoices. I appreciate what the DG say, Honorable Chair, that there will be an SLA directly with the TAMS. The issue is that we have a problem in the DOD environment where people do services, but the money, the revenue that's generated doesn't actually go to that particular unit. It goes back to a central fund or it goes back to a treasury. It's not reinvested in the institution itself. I'd like to know what is that case, and that may be one of the complications, because military veterans go for treatment. There's supposed to be money paid over. Is it paid over directly to SAMS, or is it paid over to another fund somewhere else? If those things can be cleared, because the benefit would be great if it stays within SAMS, they're underfunded, they've got 50% medical stock, they got lack of equipment, refurbishment is lacking, there's a lot of issues within SAMS. In fact, SAMS is under pressure, even in Weinberg, because the sick bay at Youngsfield is not properly capacitated. So all the military veterans are supposed to go there to the sick bay and treatment, they're all going now up to SAMS, and they're causing also now a backlog and a service problem of soldiers and military veterans at the hospital. So it's just like, you know, what is the position and how can that be, how can we assist in that way? But if the benefit can go back, it will be highly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to echo what my colleague has said, because really currently I think the issue that we deal with most in terms of complaints is pensions, health care, housing, skills development. If you look at the spending, and if you look at the next quarter's similar trends, you can see that those are highly underspent. And one look at those things are the items that benefit the military veterans the most, because that's affect themselves, their families, around them, their immediate. And those are highly underspent. If you look at the slide 17, it's good to report that on the administration you've met most of the targets. But what one must understand, and I've got appreciation for that, you need a good administration. But that's a bureaucracy. So you can't just make sure you spend the money on the bureaucracy. And then the money that is supposed to, this department is there, not just to or establish another department, it's to benefit military veterans. So you can look at their real purpose in terms of how does the military veterans benefit, and then you see that those most important for them is where the problems are. Then all these targets that you've set that you've met means nothing, means absolutely nothing. And I'm not overcritical, because you need to measure yourselves in terms of, have you made an impact on the lives of military veterans? Not whether your department is running fine, but whether you've made an impact on the lives of military veterans. And in terms of those items that I've mentioned, you will see that those are appalling performances. I want to ask you with regards to the way that you deal with budgets. And you've mentioned about pension money that will be transferred. And I've got a problem with that, because it means that those who currently qualify for pensions, and my colleague has mentioned some of that, now that money's been transferred, what happens to that benefits that they qualify for them now? We know that for you in the future to get additional money to pay the benefits that is now due, but which money is transferred, it's highly unlikely that you will get those extra money to pay that. Is that really in the best interest of military veterans to have that money transferred, DG? Also on healthcare, and my colleague has mentioned that, I mean, you know, people are phoning us constantly to say that they've got problems at 1 mil, 2 mil, with all medical stuff. And it seems like, because even this performance, and you've mentioned some of this money is from the previous financial year, which is a fraction, a 10% of the total of that budget. And if that is from the previous year, then it means that how much has been spent in this financial year in terms of benefits or originated? Do you have information from SAMHSA in terms of benefits that people have used? Irrelevant whether you've received the invoice or not. So that we can know whether you need to reserve money for benefits that they've enjoyed. Then I also want to know from you, DG, how do you deal with, you mentioned about overspend, some is highly overspend. What is the process of getting approval for that? Who approves overspend of budgets and transfer of budgets, like that you mentioned pension money being transferred? What is the process and who approves that? Because is that not part of the problem of the continuous qualified auditors this department is getting? Because you're spending it wrong, and you're transferring it wrong, and you're reallocating it wrong, not in terms of the PFMA. Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the PMB should be recommended for making some progress in its performance management during the second and third quarter. Chair, I would like to check from the department what really contributed to the slower than expected spending on its healthcare. I know my colleagues have said a mouthful, but I would also like to stress on that. We would like to know if there are any challenges that need the portfolio committee's attention, because we can see that there are some underlying challenges. Chairperson, one of the challenges was the instability in the top management. I would like to know what progress has been made in appointing the chief director and director for the military veterans database. Also, Chairperson, given the historical slow delivery of houses for to the military veterans. What is the progress so far? Since only 8% of the budget has been spent, it's very much unlikely that you may reach the target of 1,000 houses by the end of financial year. I think, Chairperson, these challenges houses need the urgent attention of the different ministers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ministers. And Honorable Zambuza, still have comments. I want us to wrap up with your comments on that issue.
Yes, Chair. I think my question is linked to the issue of the vacancies, because here what I've observed, there's a comment on slide 19 where it says all managers responsible for filling vacant advertised posts will be given a time frame. I think this report, if it is a second quarter, I think we should expect that you are given the information that this has happened, not to say they will be, not to say they are still going to be given the time frame. So I think this is an this is something that has to be looked at by the management when they bring reports because of the information. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Won't be something different from what you see. So in future we must not separate them. And then when we go to it, you must only tell us those issues that you did not cover now. Can we do that in order? Can we get your response? I don't want to respond to questions. How do members feel? You should to point four, right? Or come back?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Some issues in point four may answer the question that we have asked, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I agree with the link between the dashboard and the EFMR. Chair, let me maybe just deal with introduction with one question that Honorable Yetao asked about the reporting in quarter four about quarter two. But Chair, I think that's an issue that the members must work on. Because you provide us a date on which we must come and report. And they have a dashboard. We didn't choose to come and report today. Our reports are ready. Because besides reporting to you, we report to BPME, we report to Treasury, we report to AG on the quarterly basis. So these reports are all prepared within the time frames they set. So those were long spent in those times. So you must just tell us when you want us to come. So Chair, I must say, in terms of the presentation you had here, I insisted that the presentation correlates directly with the dashboard document. So you'll see the numbering in this presentation is the same as the numbering. find the evidence of density for some of these things, but to me that was a logical question. So let me say if you look at our report, our presentation, page 4, serial number 1, we've already reported to you on emojis. Similarly, serial number 2, we've reported to you in February on that. Number 3, 4, 5, we've reported to you on already. Okay? Number 6, which is the report on the disciplinary cases, we're busy with that, and we will be able to report next week on that matter. We should have a full report on that. I can just, for those that also sit in SCOPA, we were given deadlines with regard to the cases that were reported in SCOPA. It's 105 cases. We've made significant progress in that regard. The Financial Misconduct Committee has dealt now with all 105 cases. They've reported to me. So far, we've managed to get through about 40 of the 105 and send letters to the staff members. We will find more time to do the other outstanding ones, get the reports and do the letters. I must say, even just to do 40, took a whole morning. So we really need to set aside time to deal with all of that, and we commit to it. So we'll report to you after next week on the number of cases. Then numbers 7 to 12. Those issues on the dashboard are due to be reported on Friday in the Joint Standing Committee. So we're not reporting today on that, because that's a Friday's report. And then number 13, which was on the overall of supply chain management. Let me just summarize that. What we've done in that regard is we've appointed the Deputy Director of Supply Chain. And that we've advertised the post for the director, and we hope to fill it soon. So that also relates to the previous question about are we filling posts? Yes, we're moving significantly to fill posts in our report just now in October. Then also what we've done is we've set up, we've reconstituted the supply chain committee, the bid adjudication, evaluation, etc. committee. There were previously severe problems with those, and that's why we've reconstituted. So that supply chain management is in place, and we think the process is proceeding as per the law and regulations, which I think is our main concern in that regard. Then serial number 14 was over the page on page slide 7 on ENFA. I think there's I just want to correct what's written in bullet 2. It should say the funds that were transferred to NSFAT. Both NSFAT is written wrongly there, and the NOC needs to be deleted. As the committee knows, there was about 175 million that was transferred in previous financial years to NSFAT. It sat there, but we've met with NSFAT. We have agreement on how the money is being used, and it's part of the money that's being used to pay for the education support at the moment. So of the 175 million, we are now down to 53 million. So we've spent about 120 million of it, and the 53 million remains, and it's being used still to pay our obligations in that regard, and it won't be sufficient. So once we've processed all this year's applications for education support, because remember, for higher education, most of the applications come in January, February, March, because of the opening of the academic year. So we're busy still processing all of those. But once we've processed all of those, we expect the 53 million to have been used up. And then there won't be any money left at NSFAT. And then we'll need to look at what arrangements we need. And let me give the committee the assurance that all of that money is accounted for, and there's no money that's been used for that. So, then serial number 15 on CETIP, that was the discussion we had last week. Serial number 16 on the database. Let me say that this is, as you know, it's taken a lot of attention from our side. We have got the assistance of TDSI on the call center we discussed last week, and we're proceeding as per the discussion last week. The payout of burial support, I think we've had some discussion on that. I don't need to repeat that here. Quarterly reports on housing and transport. I think I've said a lot about housing. I think what remains for me to say is that the processes around housing and the numbers. It is true that there are two lots of numbers. There's the 4990 and the 1421. Okay? The 4990 is the overall list of people that we need to provide housing for at the moment. However, we've then taken out of that those that we're prioritizing as the first batch that will be provided housing, and that's the 1421. And as you said correctly, honorable members, that is above the target of 1,000. Our target was 1,000, but we're looking at 1421. Now, I just want to briefly explain, and maybe Mr. Musi can explain a bit more later. But we have done a prioritization in terms of the rollout of the housing, and the prioritization has been to focus on former members of the non-statutory forces. And there's a reason for this, in that we feel, and also the feeling of the executive authorities both in our department and in the human settlements department, is that those that suffer the most from lack of housing is the non-statutory force members. Many members of the statutory forces, when they were serving, were provided with housing, housing subsidies, and so on. So the biggest need is those largely that were forced to leave the country, and when they were serving in the various armed forces, were not able to receive housing. For instance, if you were training in Angola or Tanzania, you couldn't receive a house in South Africa. So to be straight about that. And I think that we also have a legitimate ability to do that in terms of the Act, because Section 31E of the Act says that one of the principles recognized for the delivery of benefits, 31E, is disparities, inequalities, or unfair discrimination as regards the benefits of military veterans and their dependents must be identified and, where possible, remedied. Now, we identify that there is a disparity, inequality, and unfair discrimination against former members of the NSF forces, which are the Liberation Army forces, because they were discriminated against in the past. There were inequalities and disparities in that they couldn't receive these benefits in the past, and therefore we are focusing the initial batch of delivery of services. That's the legal basis for what we're saying, and I hope honorable members will agree with that. So that number of 1421 is non-statutory force members that are being prioritized in the beginning, and the number of the 4990 is the total grouping, non-statutory and statutory forces that eventually will be in the house. Let me even say, though, that there are a few projects that were already underway where statutory forces were already receiving houses, and we haven't blocked those projects. That's continuing. For instance, there's a project in Bluedong. We're trying to sort it out with the Western Cape provincial government. But unfortunately, from my side, the allocation of houses there is completely skewed to the former statutory forces. And I think that is not correct, but we've allowed them to continue and we're negotiating with them on how to resolve the issue. So there, the first batch of houses, I think, is 16, and there are only two non-statutory force members that are receiving houses. And I hope honorable members would agree with me that we need to change that. And it doesn't need to sort of so I thought I would just use this opportunity to Once we can do that, then the department will be able to cut the umbilical cord with the department. I must say, members, that I also think some of the problems that the department faces was the result of moving too quickly to cut certain of the services that the Department of Defense was providing in the past. And that has led to some of the chaos in the department in the last while. The Department of Defense has very strong, effective, robust systems, whether they're in HR, whether they're budgeting, whether they're provision of services. And the department, some time ago, had decided to let go of those services and didn't put in place replacements for them. So I can say that sometimes I wish we were still with the DOE systems, I'll be honest to you, because they are real systems that are in place, and we, a new department, that is struggling with them. But our commitment there is there to do it, and I hope you will see the progress we make. Then in terms of your thoughts on the new structure, as it's been approved, we will report on that once it is approved. Let me just say, because it came up as one of the questions, and I think I can answer that immediately, whether we are making progress to fill posts. Yes, we are making progress to fill posts. We've filled a significant number of posts already, and we'll report on that. We've also advertised, if you look at the Sunday newspapers last week, we advertised a very significant number of posts. That's also showing you that we're busy with the process, and we will advertise more posts. And amongst the posts we advertise are key posts in service delivery branches, in particular SES. We've there advertised the outstanding chief director and director posts, which are directly related to the delivery of services. So we will obviously have to follow the process and the time frames and the habits, but we hope to be filling those posts significantly. There was also a question about the database posts, and we have taken, steps to fill the director position. We went through all the applications that we had received for the director position. Unfortunately, we didn't find anyone suitable in the applications. We then requested and received permission from the executive authority to headhunt for that post. We've identified someone who we think is suitable for that post, and we are looking at a lateral transfer of that person who is currently a member of the public service in another department to be laterally transferred to our department. We've done the paperwork in that regard, and we are just waiting for the DG of that department to sign off on it. I had another engagement with him on Monday. That is really critical because we need that capacity in the database to strengthen the work that we're doing on the procedures. And then also the chief director post there, we will also advertise that. So we really want to have said that because in database, unlike in some of the other sections, the biggest problem is leadership in that section, having chief director and director. We've got a lot of Indians there, but not chiefs. But you need leadership on the number of positions. Chief, should I just quickly move to the questions?
You need to wrap up quick.
Yeah, I'm going to. So then, Chair,
just before you go to answer to the questions, if I've got a question on this.
Yeah, put the question before you answer the question.
I want to respond to the broad explanation that the DG has now given about housing, statutory versus non-statutory. I hope the DG don't see us here, committee, when we complain about the under budget, that this is because we want to favour one group over the other. If that is the case, really you must change your mind, and we will reject that. Because if we sit here, it's about military veterans. And if it is that the housing is for the non-statutory forces, and we see that only 8% has been spent, it implies a major number of non-statutory force members who qualify for houses and who require housing do not get housing. and similar with the pensions, and similar with the health care. So my request is don't play the game of statutory versus non-statutory and implying that we are fighting for old statutory forces. That's not the case. That's not the case. If you do not spend the money that is supposed to benefit military veterans, that's unacceptable. So please, and that's my plea, come here with a good qualified situation in terms of that. I perceive that as a bit of a, you know, trying to shift the blame and looking for excuses. Please do not do that, because it must benefit military veterans.
Thank you very much, Honorable Marie. My understanding was that the DG, we won't call you acting because you get tired of that long name. was trying to explain the reality on the ground, the historical reality on the ground. My understanding is not that he thinks this committee favors one military veteran against another military veteran. And then you write, Honorable Marie, we must always put it very clear to everybody that to us in this committee, a military veteran will be a military veteran. A soldier will be a soldier. Everywhere in the world. Can you wrap up quickly?
Sure. Let me reiterate, I'm not implying anything. What I want the committee to understand.
I don't want you answer that. You have answered that.
No, because I want the committee to understand what you're doing so that when it comes up, that you're aware of why it's coming. That's really why I'm raising it in response to the numbers. I'm not implying anything. We work, as I say, we work with
yeah,
all...
Yeah, I want you to go on.
Okay, then just in terms of the agreements, MOUs, I'll allow DG Marco to respond on that issue. That was Honourable Dunwoody's question.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think we went the wrong way in the department in terms of MOU, that of chasing quantity over quality, and we've since realized that. The policy is ready, and the standard operation procedure is also ready. We need to be tabled to MANCO, then EXCO, but further be consulted to military veterans. But what I need to impress is when we look at the quality, we need to go to branches, service delivery branches, and have an understanding from their side as to what are their priorities, what is it that they want in terms of agreement that would enhance their implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Felicia. And then there was SL also asked about the skill quarters. As we've said, we'll come back once that is finalized about that. Then he raised the issue of benefits and money on private education. Let me stress this. We have finalized a policy on education support, which is both basic and tertiary education. We had approval for the policy. We wanted to implement the policy. We engaged with our stakeholders, in particular the advisory council at Sunba. There was unhappiness with the implications of the policy and the feeling that the engagement period was not long enough. So we've agreed with the executive authority that we won't implement aspects of the policy in this financial year, but we will implement it in the next financial year once we sort the policy. The policy says that the department will not fund private education. It will only fund education in public institutions. That is one of the most contentious issues with the stakeholders. The department is very firm on this. It's our belief that that's the correct direction, but the stakeholders don't agree with us on this. So I hope you will also engage with our stakeholders and try and convince them on that issue. However, I want to split your mandatory. In the policy, there are limits for basic education. The maximum amount we pay is 42,000. For higher education, the maximum amount is 72,000. Okay? We have agreed that we are going to stick to those limits for this year. Sorry, and skills is 40,000. Let me add to that. Okay? Now, we've agreed, because of the financial problems we're facing, that we are not going to exceed those amounts. And I can assure the committee that the only cases where we've exceeded those amounts so far in this round of applications are with regard to special skills, which is provided for in the policy. For instance, if someone is studying for medicine, it's specifically mentioned in the policy that you can pay more, because unfortunately a medical degree is much more expensive than all other degrees, so that's there. There's also mention of training for a pilot's license, which is also much more expensive. However, even that one, we're looking at how we're going to reduce it. And then there are two cases where we've exceeded the amount because the beneficiary is not a South African. And I want to explain this to you. There are military veterans who are registered legitimately on our database, because they were part of the armed struggle, however they live in neighboring countries. I can explain the exact situation at some point and who we're referring to, but these veterans, the military veteran was in jail in South Africa for more than 15 years as a participant in the armed struggle. He's a legitimate military veteran, okay? But he's a citizen of a neighboring country. His children need to study in South Africa, and it puts additional costs in that case. So it's those specific cases that we've exceeded, and it's not a very large amount, but we've slightly exceeded on the maximum amount. But the paperwork is in order for that. It's been done as a deviation, and the evidence is provided to justify those cases. But beyond those cases that I've mentioned now, we are not exceeding the amounts, whether it's in private education or in public institutions. So I hope the committee will agree with the approach that we've taken. And as I say, we need more support from the committee. If you agree with the direction that we're taking in the policy, that we want to only want to fund public institutions, state-owned institutions, then we need you to also help convince the military veterans that that's the right approach. In terms of the burial support, I think DG Marvin can just respond on that, about some burials getting more money than others.
For burial support, the total amount that we pay is 25,000. But the breakdown is that 17,500 is paid from DMD and 7,500 paid for a special pension. But in the event that the member wasn't getting special pension, we pay the whole 25,000. Under memorialization, there is honoring. We then facilitate as a department request that we get from SANBA for members to go and honor their fellow comrades and attend the funeral. But we locate that in the province. So if a person in Limpopo has passed on, we don't transport people from all over South Africa. We facilitate within that province so as to talk about. As part of memorialization as well, we are now rolling out tombstones, so that which is an additional amount to the 25,000. We want to make sure that all military veterans are actually having a tombstones in their graves.
Thank you very much. Why do you give an example?
I'm from Cape Town.
It's a cap on the additional expenses.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. 20,000 towards the tombstone.
And the transport and other things for the other members of the family.
That's
sorry,
always
sorry, yeah, just the capping, what does it entail? All the other additional costs. The tombstone, if it's 20,000, the transport, if there's other all other expenses involved.
The transport cost varies. If, for instance, it's a special provincial official funeral, the costs are higher. If it's an ordinary funeral, they're slightly less. I don't have the figures of them. However, I want to indicate that as much as possible, we use GMV buses in the transportation as much as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to follow up.
I'll really rush. Let me say on the pension that I agree on the point of communication. The department hasn't communicated, but we also need to put that in place. We need to develop a regulation, policy, and operating procedure. And I think it would be wrong for us to start paying that out without the voting fixes that we've already got. With regard to the issues that were raised about working with the SANDF on pension and medical aid, we're not empowered to do that. That falls within their area, but I think the committee could help to engage them, and maybe when we look at changing the act, maybe that's something we could also look at. And similarly with the issue of where the money goes to. MOU is with the Department of Defense, so when we pay for healthcare, we pay the Department of Defense. How they then allocate the money is not our concern. In terms of Honorable Marais's question about administration versus the other areas, look, the problem is the design of the department as it is at the moment. The administration area has been fully capacitated, but the areas which develop benefits were not capacitated in terms of the organizational design. So that's why we're paying so much attention to dealing with that area. And of course, our biggest concern, I think you can hear where our concern is on providing benefits, because that's what changes around the military veterans. With healthcare, I think there's still a lot to be done with our engagement with SAMHS, and as I said, developing the SLA and then implementing that. As I tried to say, we've now dealt with the previous year's invoices. We are up to date with invoices until December last year, December 22. So it's just now January, February, March invoices. But part of the problem is the speed at which SAMHS generates their benefits. And then whether we look at the benefit use, yes. That's also what we've been doing. We don't just accept invoices and pay them. We interrogate what is provided for in the invoice, whether it meets actual benefit, and we only pay for proper services in that. And part of the process of sorting this whole system out was us returning a whole lot of invoices that we were not happy with, that they didn't indicate the benefit. But I think there's now understanding in SAMHS of what we require from them in that regard. I also think, honorable members, that the target in the strategic plan talks about access to healthcare. So we report on the number of people who are able to go and receive healthcare. In other words, they get a card. Okay, that's what access to healthcare is. What we actually should be reporting is how many people receive what kind of service from SAMHS and what was the level of service that was provided. Now, at the moment, that's not an indicator in the strategic plan, but it's the one that we've raised and discussed internally, and we will look the SLA on how we can then factor that into the SLA. I don't want to say more about houses. I think I've covered most of the areas. Honorable Lindsay, thanks for the comment that you can see progress. And I hope that you will show a lot more progress in the coming reports. Slower than expected spending on healthcare, I think I've explained that. chairman that if you could also pay some attention to the issue of sectors. I think the leadership here from the departments, our executive authority, even at the level of the chief of the National Defence Force, there's an understanding that there are problems. So I think the committee, it would be good if you could maybe visit some of the facilities. We would like to go with you when you do that as well. And also if we could find other ways to interrogate on this issue, because I think your pressure will help us also to resolve the issue. I think I've answered on the other issues that the honourable member has raised. Chair, I thought to the very individuals.
Thank you very much. We will now move to the consideration. Honourable Dambuza, you still have some
questions? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to request that when they bring the fourth quarter report, they must indicate, they must present a breakdown of the type of training that has been provided. So that was my request, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We also have a request, Honourable Sam.
Yeah, no, Chief, the worry that I have is that when you say that the department is accessible and the provincial offices are not operational or functional, there was an indication in the last report there were 5 offices set up in the 5 provinces. We'd like to know when they're going to be 9, and the 28 million that was spent, how it was spent actually to capacitate these offices, because there's some serious complaints about these offices.
Okay, we'll need that report. The communication strategy, Mr. Musi, would be with the military veteran. I think that is what we would need going forward, and then we should be clear as to how you communicate with them. Now we move down to the consideration of minutes. Honorable members, I have a suggestion on our approach. We need to every time improve our approach to minutes. You remember last time we would have minutes piling up and then adopt them, but now we have improved a lot that the minutes comes after every meeting or after every 2 meetings. That is excellent from the part of the secretaries. But the other thing that I want us to do is that in the normal consideration of minutes, there will always matters arising. And then I don't think we have done well on that one. And since we have adopted the dashboard approach, I think that matter is the matter that we should look into. As to what matters are arising. I was just looking at the minutes, the last 2 set of minutes, like saying that the department made a commitment to support the NK soldier blazing turrets. It ends up there. We don't know what has been done after that. You see, I think those things we should also put them on the dashboard, yes. We must always have those minutes. Yeah, put them on the dashboard. Yeah, the commenting Peter Kabinde for the good work done at the Armed Forces Day. We don't know that for that. We don't have a follow-up for that. I think that should be our approach. And I've realized that the dashboard should not only apply to the department; it should also apply to this committee. What reminded me was your question about the quarterly reports, Honorable Isau, because I also thought that was a good question until Mr. Kosinski indicated where is the gray area, or the area on our part. Indeed, we would like to have the quarterly report to be presented at the end of every quarter. That way it will improve our interaction with the department, and it will make us able to efficiently monitor the progress as per our effort. I think that is the position that the committee should take now. Thank you very much. Can we go to the minutes that are on top, 22 February. Can we look at the honorable members, can we look at the recommendations? No, you are not accused. You are part of this. Yeah, I'm just talking about the minutes now. These minutes are part of you. Can we check at the resolutions for outcomes and resolution on the minutes of the 22 February 1st, honorable members? Apart from the
15th.
What is it?
15th
February. Well, we'll come to that. It doesn't matter which ones we start with. we'll come to that. The resolutions. Are the resolutions well captured? And except that is what I said about the matter arising. Honorable sir.
I don't have any problem with the minutes. If there's some mistakes made, typographical errors, I can get back to the committee. But I think your point made, Honorable Chair, is the issue of putting it on the dashboard. If we can just have the items for action taken out, that will also help so that when we come to the meeting, we address that immediately. So I think the committee secretary, with the support staff, can actually just put this. Is to where we have to respond. For instance, there's one meeting that's supposed to be scheduled, which will be a closed meeting for us to be briefed about the airstrips, where the planes and things are landing and moving, and the regional countries are complaining about African planes are crossing their borders and landing. So that was going to be a closed discussion, just to action it and to say that when do we actually have a meeting with the DOT regarding that specific matter. And so the other points I suggest, as you directly say, if it goes onto a dashboard for action, it will help.
Thank you very much. Then are we saying that we want a mover for the adoption of this minute? You move, Honorable Saul, Honorable Zinitsky. You second. Thank you. The minutes adopted. Can we go to the minutes of the 15th of February and look at the resolutions. For instance, on the resolutions, we also need to have targets. I don't think the 7.2 is sufficiently captured. I think we need to go on to say that it should be put in our program of the oversight program. That should be put in our oversight code. We need to have clear targets every time, which means that we will do exactly what Honorable Sao was saying in the term of should then. When we bring a program here, the return responses to questions, we haven't been doing very well on that, Honorable Members. I think it's because we are not clear. We do not have targets about that. Because we need to have deadlines, and those responses